The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome, welcome, welcome to a Wednesday, everybody. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live from NicoleSandler.com on the Progressive Voices Network, on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Twitch even, and on a number of other places as well, airprogressive.org, Netroots Radio, and other stations who carry the show. And of course, you could be listening at your own, on your own timetable, because the show also goes out as a podcast. It is not Progressive Voices is airing. Oh, there we go. Okay, I think we're on now. Hi, Progressive Voices. I'm not behind a paywall, which is good because I come from the world of radio. And radio was always free to the end user, except public radio did pledge drives. They were listener supported. And I started my career in public radio. And so I've done those pledge drives. I don't like asking for money, but here I am today asking for money because I just got the call from the surgery center where they'll be doing my surgery, and my health insurance plan has a 20% copay for any surgical procedures. Now, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, but when I go in for my surgery 1 week from today, I need to hand over $500. So if you're of a mind to help out, I'm not going to do a GoFundMe because they take a ridiculous amount of money. But if you would like to help contribute to the cause, I'd certainly appreciate it. I do take Venmo and Zelle. I think it's Zelle, right? All those cash apps. And I think they're in on the donate page at NicoleSandler.com. But if you can, kick in a few bucks, I certainly would appreciate it. All right. So there's that. So I look over in the chat room and I see, a lot of people going, yay, Marcy Wheeler is here. Yeah. That's how I feel too. So Marcy Wheeler, of course, writes at emptywheel.net. And I'm telling you, she provides the most comprehensive coverage of everything going on that pertains to national security, that pertains to January 6th, to the investigations into the former guy, and including what happened, the search warrant that was executed at Mar-a-Lago now just over 2 weeks ago. So, and I know I told you yesterday that she was going to be here live, but She actually messaged me today, and she said, I know I said I'd do it live, but you know what? I'm really exhausted. Is there any way we can tape? So we did. It was just a couple hours ago. The only thing that, and we didn't even get into the Joe Biden's announcement today, where he said the government is forgiving $10,000 in federal student loan debt for people earning up to $125,000 a year. So that's a pretty good cross-section of America. And if you have a Pell Grant, they'll forgive up to $20,000. So have at it. And for those of you who don't qualify, or if you have more debt than that, they are once again extending the pause in payment of student loans. So if that applies to you, you have cause to celebrate. Maybe you can even kick in a few bucks to my medical bills. All right. I'm not going to wait any longer because we have a lot of questions for Marcy Wheeler. So with no further ado, this will work today. I know it because I tested it. And if it doesn't, I have a backup plan. But it will work today. I'm sure of it. Yeah. With no further ado, let's go to the tape and Marcy Wheeler. Fingers crossed. All right. I'm so happy that she's available to talk to us because Marcy Wheeler, when all this stuff is going on, I always have this question in the back of my mind. I wonder what Marcy Wheeler thinks about this. And there you are over in Ireland, still writing every day, multiple times a day at emptywheel.net, trying to tell us what's happening here and doing a great job of it. So thank you and welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's always fun.
Yeah. Now, we only spoke a few weeks ago, and it seems like everything exploded since then. And what happened was a search warrant was executed at Mar-a-Lago. And wow.
You saw that coming, right?
Oh, yeah. No, actually, did not see that coming. Glad it happened. But the thing that gets me is we've been waiting for the other shoe to drop on all this January 6th stuff, waiting for justice to tip their hand and let us know what they've been working on. And all of a sudden, out of left field, we find this search warrant dealing with classified documents that Trump absconded with when he left the White House. That certainly wasn't on my radar. Was it on yours?
Well, look, I mean, we knew there was an investigation. That was reported back in February. We knew that there were some interviews going on. That was reported back in May. This document that came out that everyone reported as if it was new the other day actually was posted by the archives, and it disclosed to us what the archives discovered in January when they looked at what Trump had finally returned and what they discovered. And to be fair to Washington Post, they reported this in real time. What they discovered is that there were what are called special access programs, which is more secret than top secret, that were in these boxes. But even so, there were still things missing. And so what we've learned since then are all of the details about, because it's not, and this is not getting reported, and it's driving me nuts. And I'm sure I'm pissing off a lot of people by insisting on it. But the headline crime that Trump is being investigated for is the Espionage Act. Mm-hmm. Basically, he's being investigated for stealing documents and refusing to give them back, and also storing them in a storage room in a club riddled with foreign intelligence assets and a bad lock. So that's the headline crime. But at the same time, he's being investigated for obstructing an investigation or investigations, mm-hmm, by hiding, destroying, or altering documents. And we don't know the full scope of what's included in that, but we do know the same Washington Post reporting that I just mentioned back from February that first reported this referral. In that same story, they said, you know, the archives, as they were pulling documents to give to the January 6th committee, kept finding things that were pasted back together, right, kept finding things that Trump had tried to destroy. And so, you know, obviously there are things we know that Trump and his lawyers did to obstruct the effort of getting these documents back. But we also know that there were investigations, plural, but, you know, the one that has already been mentioned in the context of this investigation, where he deliberately tried to destroy evidence. And that's a crime, too. And if they went to his house and found more such efforts, more such, you know, half-torn up documents that are critical to investigation, then things could really snowball. And for whatever reason, the New York Times and the Washington Post really don't want to. I mean, it's hilarious, Nicole, because remember during the Mueller investigation, all that the New York Times especially wanted to talk about was obstruction, 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 mm-hmm, obstruction. And it was, mm-hmm, like, no, there's actually an underlying conspiracy question here, which I'm the only one who ever reports this, but was actually, it continued after the end of the Mueller investigation. The Roger Stone was still under investigation. But back then, all New York Times was like, it's only about obstruction. That was false. Now they're like, it's only about documents. They of course don't want to use that word espionage. And to be fair, it is misleading because it's not an accusation yet that he was spying for hostile foreign powers.
Because we don't know what he planned to do with these documents.
We don't know. And there's a lot of impatience. Why hasn't he been arrested yet? And one of the answers for why is, I mean, let's be honest, he's the former president, and you're going to want to nail this. And you're also going to want to nail the other people who would be witnesses before you were to arrest him. But the other thing is, it's not clear that DOJ has yet fully understood what was going on when Trump was obstructing this investigation. And they may, you know, again, there could be, it could be January 6th, a right-wing journalist insanely, stupidly, back on the 17th, he said, oh, well, Trump was doing this because he didn't want to give documents back to the archives because he knew that these left-wingers at the archives were handing them over to the January 6th committee. Well, that's a confession of obstruction right there. And I'm sure once those documents were seized and brought back to DOJ, the prosecutors investigating Trump are like, hey, can you give us anything new? Because we've just been told by this stupid right-wing journalist that the intent of this was to keep documents away from us. We'd like those documents, please. Thank you very much. So so there's a lot of impatience, but it's not yet clear the full scope, especially of this obstruction investigation. And, you know, I would caution people to not get too far ahead of the quote unquote Espionage Act, because it's bad enough. What we already know is bad enough. And if it gets worse, then it may get worse, but let's let DOJ do their jobs.
Right. Now, hasn't the Espionage Act been trotted out a few times in the recent past? Julian Assange, reality winner, Chelsea Manning, weren't they all charged under the Espionage Act?
Yeah, and the better examples, reality winner was charged under Trump. So this is somebody that should, you know, Trump should be held accountable to those same standards. People in the same network, Terry Albury, also a source for The Intercept, and Daniel Hale, also a source for The Intercept, they brought home more documents than Reality Winner, and both didn't send everything they had to The Intercept. Huh. And when they were being sentenced, Trump's DOJ, right, the DOJ that Bill Barr and then Jeff Sessions and then mm-hmm. Bill Barr were running, really emphasized the fact that taking sensitive documents home from work and leaving them, you know, on your home computer or in a closet where you had, you know, foreign employees walking by every day, that is a dangerous crime itself. I did a post that pointed to there are two guys understood to be the sources for shadow brokers, mm-hmm. Which led to two massive global malware attacks, WannaCry and NotPetya, that both did hundreds of billions of dollars of damage. These were major, major events. Those were traced to two guys who did exactly what Donald Trump did. They brought stuff home, in their case from the NSA, and the stuff was taken from them by entities that are believed to have ties to Russia, and then sent back out and turned into this massive information operation. And so, again, they were prosecuted under a guy named Donald Trump, mm-hmm. under his own attorneys general. One got, I'm trying to remember, maybe 5 years in prison. The other guy got 108 months in prison for doing what Trump did. And so mm-hmm. if you want to hold Trump to the standards of the Trump administration, then Trump should be looking at a pretty serious sentence just on the stolen documents, ignoring the obstruction side.
He should be. And, you know, once again, I know it's futile to point out the Republican hypocrisy, but you have to. You know, they went ballistic over Hillary Clinton's emails. And I don't think there was anything determined to be confidential there or top secret. I know there was some talk that there might have been a handful of documents that might have been confidential, but nothing reaching this level. We're hearing now that there were over 700 documents seized by the FBI.
700 pages. Of 700 pages.
Okay.
Thus far counted.
So, gotcha.
But, and we're also going to learn there's more because, for example, some of the stuff that Trump is known to have taken are things that to him were mementos, like the thing that we always talk about are the love letters from Kim Jong-un.
Right.
But those love letters from Kim Jong-un would be classified because they are secret communications from a hostile foreign power to the United States. And so those would be classified. sitting in his desk drawer or wherever he kept them, they wouldn't have classification marks. And it'll probably take the number, that number, to 300 documents, 300 classified documents. The first number was 150, 700 pages. That's what the archives has confirmed. The New York Times reported that between this June meeting that happened and the seizure in August, what they've already identified from that seizure, the number of actual documents has gone up to 300. And again, these are not just, you know, guides to how to call into the CIA. These are very, very sensitive programs he brought home and left in his basement. Or more importantly, the most sensitive documents that were seized were ones that were in his office. And it's not even clear what kind of, you know, it was in a hotel safe, we think. Wow. So those are laughably insecure. Yeah. And that's where he was keeping some of the most important secrets that he stole from the United States.
Right. And this is after his attorney, or you say, what did you call her? Possibly the custodian of records. But she presents herself as his attorney. Christina Bob signed off on documents saying before this subpoena, the search warrant, sorry, that they had turned over everything. And then the archives and the DOJ came back and said, well, no, actually you haven't. And they kept trying to get them to give it up, and that's when they finally issued the search warrant. Do I have that right? So they've been putting it out there that Trump was cooperating in this, you know, to turn over all the documents. But then we hear, no, indeed he was not. They were lying to the records archives and justice, saying we turned everything over when they hadn't.
Right. So what happened was, I mean, it's been this 18-month process now, more than that, but the archives for a year kept asking the people, his lawyers, can you please give us stuff back? We know we know there's stuff missing. Can you please give it back? And I think Trump, like at every stage, he has screwed himself over, because I think he believed that he could take things and no one would look in his archives for 5 years, so he'd get away with it. No one would look and see that there were missing documents. But the archives were like, let's go find the historic letter he sent to Joe Biden. Let's go find the love letters from Kim Jong-un. They nailed it, because of course he was holding on to those, because those for him are love letters, right, not classified documents from a hostile foreign power. And so after a year, they got one set of documents, which was clearly, I mean, yes, it had classified documents. Yes, it had ripped up evidence for the January 6th committee. But it also, the Washington Post reported yesterday, it also had just garbage in it. Like somebody had gone in and filled the boxes with unrelated papers. And then the documents were in there went somewhere else. Trump tried to prevent the FBI from even looking at the documents because, you know, he was claiming, executive privilege, and the archives were like, no, you know, like it's up to Joe Biden what we need to do to protect this country. And you had these documents sitting in your hotel safe for a year, and we need to figure out whether any of these programs have been compromised. So that was a month long delay that Trump did from April to May. In May, DOJ subpoenas him. There was probably more stalling. And then at the beginning of June, they're like, okay, come get the documents. And the lawyers hand him, you know, a handful of documents. And this guy, Jay Bratt, who's in charge of all of counterintelligence for DOJ, was like, okay, but can we see your storage room? And Trump probably didn't, you know, he didn't expect that. They go in, they looked, and it was, I suspect, clear to the FBI that they had found existing classified documents. And so this guy, Bratt, again, said, we want you to sign a declaration that you've given us all the classified documents. And it sounds like one lawyer, his name is Evan Corcoran, who also, by the way, represents Steve Bannon,
Oi,
wrote this affirmation. There are no more documents left, but he didn't sign it. Right. Bob signed it.
Christina
and
Bob signed it.
So they're playing this game where they both claim not to know what the other one's doing. So Bob signed it. And at that point, they had given DOJ evidence that Trump still was was withholding classified documents that they knew about. They lied to the DOJ about having given them all back. And then DOJ said, by the way, can we have the surveillance video from that hallway? I suspect we're going to learn there was more delay in that, but they got the surveillance video and it showed people moving in and out of the closet, clearly like arranging things before or after that visit. They've gotten another subpoena to figure out what happened between the Brat visit and the seizure. And they're still interviewing people from Mar-a-Lago to figure out who had access, who knew about it, you know, who, I guess, worked with Trump to load up the boxes. And that's where we're at. But we've since of the stuff that was seized, like Trump is insane. Like at every stage he screws up.
Yeah.
When Michael Cohen had phones seized in 2018, and as far as we know, the only damning stuff about Donald Trump on those phones were the hush payments.
Right.
The
Stormy Daniels. Right.
It wasn't damning. It wasn't that damning. It was embarrassing. And Trump, through Trump Organization, filed an appearance to try and prevent DOJ from getting those documents 4 days after the seizure. Not immediate. I mean, Michael Cohen did immediately, but 4 days. We're here. It is 16 days after the seizure, and Trump did make a filing on Monday, but it was hilarious. It was just ridiculously bad, and they're not taking it seriously. They believe that they believed before this that Garland would not come search Mar-a-Lago, and after Garland has searched Mar-a-Lago, I think they believe, and this may be why the Washington Post and New York Times are calling this a document issue rather than espionage and obstruction. But, you know, I guess maybe they've convinced themselves that they can continue to make veiled threats against Merrick Garland and he'll never arrest Donald Trump.
Yeah. God, there's so much there. Marcy Wheeler is with us. Okay. So in the meantime, we've heard that Donald Trump, as much as he may claim, I don't even know what's there, that he actually personally went through these boxes and pulled stuff and said, that's mine. They can't have that. That's mine. Do we know more about that? George Conway said his fingerprints.
I don't always pitch my work on your show, but I will. Please. I did on my site what we think and know was in the affidavit to search Trump's house. And some of the things they're going to focus in on that are, for example, when Brat came to Mar-a-Lago in June, Trump made a point of stopping by and saying, hey, I want to really help you.
Yeah.
And Trump thinks that's going to help him. But in that affidavit, I promise you, it instead says Trump was aware that we had concerns about these documents and that we came and told Trump personally, got to give the documents back. And he didn't give the documents back, not even after we told him there were still documents. We know that there was a follow-up after that meeting. And what the follow-up almost certainly says from Brat to Corcoran, the guy, you know, who's the lawyer, not the custodian.
Right.
He would have said, here are the standards that classified documents must be stored under. And, you know, it's this bureaucratic list and the locks have to have this many keys and this standard and you have to pay $20,000 for them. I mean, they're very particularized. And Trump's response to that was to go out and buy a padlock from a local hardware store and throw it on the door. And as that was a fix. Yes, DOJ's primary focus until the raid was to try and get these documents back and to find out all that was missing and to find out whether they had identified all the existing documents. But each step of that process involved the kinds of things that you will see in the search warrant. And if it comes to an arrest, in an arrest warrant, this is how DOJ makes a case that they have that the person in question knows they can't keep classified documents, knows that they can't keep classified documents in standards that aren't appropriate, and knows that they can't keep classified documents that belong to somebody else, which in this case are the archives.
Right. You know, we had heard for the longest time, you know, every classified piece of information had to be viewed in a SCIF, I've heard the term skiff, I don't know how many thousands of times over the last 15 years or so. I remember talking to members of Congress when they went in to read the Affordable Care Act or whatever bill they were working on. And they'd had to go into this room. Oh, maybe it was the TPP. Had to go into this secure room, couldn't bring a staffer, couldn't bring a phone. The precautions, and Donald Trump acts as if none of this applies to him. If the situation were reversed, if this were a Democrat who took all these documents, classified, top secret, the special circumstances ones that had to be viewed in a skiff alone, if it were reversed, what kind of hell would the Republicans be raising right now?
You know, I mean, obviously they would. That's all you'd hear. And but I honestly think in this situation, this kind of whataboutism is really not worthwhile. And that's why I point back to what did Donald Trump? How did Donald Trump's administration treat people who did exactly what he did? And because, you know, the Republicans are going to wail. I think. You know, I'm not sure that a couple of them were like, well, you know, if we find out that he was sitting on special access programs, then talk to me. We've since found out he was sitting on special access programs. It, you know, it's going to go like this for a little while. But I also think that the Republicans got, especially Marco Rubio, the Republicans got way ahead of themselves in protecting Donald Trump. And I think for a variety of reasons this time, they're going to really regret that, partly because, you know, ultimately, it's going to look ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that they are trying to defend this, it, obviously not to full MAGAs. They're still going to say whatever Trump does is fine. But it is going to look, what he did was indefensible. And I think that Trump decided early on that he was going to distract from obstruction. For an entire week, he didn't release the search warrant.
Right.
And he told the journalists, here's what's in the search warrant.
That's right.
He lied to them. Mm-hmm. And I understand why he lied about the Espionage Act. Because as I said before, thus far, we have nothing to substantiate that actual spying was involved. It's just stealing documents and refusing to give them back. But he also didn't tell anybody about the obstruction statute. Mm. And it was like it was in the warrant the whole time. And so, you know, I feel like he knows that obstruction stuff is really gonna backfire. I suspect. We'll see.
With him, you never know, right? You don't know. But there are so many inconsistencies. As you mentioned, he could have released the search warrant and the inventory of what was taken that day. He had a copy of it. He could have released it. It went all the time. He's screaming, "They need to release it all." He could have done that when the media went to the court to say, we want to see the affidavit, and Trump's on his Truth Social saying, release the unredacted version. His lawyers never once joined in the motion, never made a motion to release this stuff. They still haven't, right?
What they're asking for now is that they get a copy. They don't want the affidavit to be, like, they went to a different judge. This, I call it the whack filing because it is just so ridiculous. I spent 2.5 hours, you know, laughing at it sentence by sentence the other night. But they went to Trump's favorite judge.
One that
Florida,
he appointed, somebody, right?
Yeah, yeah. And sued rather than challenged the warrant with the magistrate who approved it, which is what you normally do. And this judge, who is so pro-Trump that it's like, it's hard to... she's very pro-Trump. She wrote this minute order yesterday, basically saying, why did you bring this to me? Really, why did you bring this to me? By the way, this is useless if you don't get an injunction from me. Why did you, I'm almost basically translating direct from the legalese. And then the last thing is she's like, you haven't even told DOJ yet. And it's true. Like as of yesterday, they had not formally notified DOJ about this lawsuit, which means even if she wanted to, she couldn't do anything. It's like the most absurd lawyering that anyone has seen in recent time. And so it's like he's not doing what he could have done, which is what he did with Michael Cohen, mm-hmm. which is to say, you know, we want a special master, we want somebody outside to go through these documents. He didn't do that in this case. He's trying it, and Rolling Stone had a piece out overnight. the reason why he's not doing that is he doesn't want the FBI to get to decide. He doesn't want DOJ to have any say about who gets those documents. He wants them back.
Right. He wants them back. He says they're mine. Mine. Yes. Now, but isn't that the filing from Monday that you said was laughable when they wanted asked for a special master to go through the stuff?
They asked for a special master, but they want the documents back.
Right.
That one of the reasons that document is so absurd is that they're trying to lay the groundwork to down the road say, well, we get these documents back because they were inappropriately seized. They are going to say they were illegally.
Uh-oh, you froze. You're still frozen.
Hearing is so, and to be fair, some of these people are moderately accomplished lawyers. I think the problem is the client is making these ridiculous requests and they don't know how to say no to him.
Right. But he's also having trouble getting, as usual, legal representation. I'm hearing it's because he doesn't pay his bills. Probably also he's tainted, right? I would imagine a lot of
remember Jane Raskin? So Jane Raskin was one of his lawyers in the Mueller investigation. She was also one of his lawyers in the first impeachment. She's from Boca.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in the neighborhood. She could go file these things in court. She is somebody who would normally be the perfect kind of lawyer. It's somebody he has this or had this existing relationship with. So I'm thinking last night, I'm like, where the heck is Jane Raskin? Because she would be competent to do this. And she may be the single lawyer who's had the most success at keeping him in check. I assume she doesn't want to have anything to do with him because she's not helping him in this situation.
Right. And apparently nobody is. And maybe he just never paid her bill either. And it could be that simple, or it could be they don't want the taint on them, which, you know, it makes sense as well. So when you talked about the Trump propagandist who released this letter, are you talking about John Solomon?
Well, Cash Lee is also a propagandist. I mean, Cash Patel is also a propagandist.
Right. Yep.
But I was speaking about John Solomon. John Solomon, for those who forget, had a column at The Hill that was being funded in a suspicious way. And in that period, he was being funneled these anti-Biden columns that were sourced to Russian assets in Ukraine. And the culmination of this operation before Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman got arrested, the culmination of it in Vienna was that Solomon was supposed to go meet with Dmitry Firtash, who's this Ukrainian-Russian mobbed-up, spooked-up guy who's been trying to fight extradition to the United States for years. And so this is a guy with, like, real ties to a Russian asset, several real ties to Russian assets. And he's the guy who was like, let me in the archives full of special access program documents. And I'm sure inside the FBI, they were going, I cannot believe this is happening. I can't believe this request. But he's not the only one. I mean, there are all these people in Trump's environs, especially now. Like, the normal MAGAs have all moved on to careers to kind of, you know, make a living. And what is left are basically the people who were in the Willard on January 6th.
Wow.
And there are some real crazy people in there. And they're the ones who are advising Trump right now. And they're the ones who are telling Trump that it doesn't matter if he stole these classified documents from the government. It's okay.
It's amazing. The double standard is just incredible. But so people need to know it's there. And that's why I brought up how they'd be reacting. I know it's whataboutism, yeah. But we've seen it. We saw what they did with the Benghazi hearings for 2 years. And they're bitching about these hearings. One would say that, you know, there's no comparison between the two. So Marcy Wheeler, another related issue is last week, the D.C. Circuit Court ordered the Justice Department to release the rest of the Barr memo that it purported to explain the Mueller report. Can you explain what's happening with this? Because I'm thrilled that they're looking at this, because we were misled by the then attorney general who mis-explained what was in there, thereby creating a narrative that couldn't be challenged for a matter of weeks until we got the redacted version. So now they're going back and looking at this, yes?
Yeah, well, it'll be another week, I think, until we figure out whether DOJ will appeal. DOJ still disagrees with the circuit and with the district judge, Amy Berman Jackson, who's great and also was the judge in the Roger Stone case. And so, you know, DOJ, just on a matter of like DOJ equities, might appeal it. But ultimately what happened here is that under Barr, DOJ was ordered to give misleading explanations for why he wanted to keep this memo secret. And at each stage, I mean, that's what Amy Berman Jackson caught them doing. She was like, you know, you said that this was about whether or not you were going to charge Donald Trump. And everyone knows you were never going to charge Donald Trump. So it was misleading. And you led Crew. It's Crew who actually filed to sue to get it.
Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Crew.
And so she was like, and Crew was arguing based on what you were saying and what was going on is that, you know, this memo was substantially about them advising you what you were going to say to Congress, but you had already decided that, you know, it was basically laying a paper trail to explain why you did certain things. You know, I think that the memo itself would be damning because it would show the basis under which Barr said all of this, all of these acts of obstruction can't be charged against Donald Trump. And we might, for example, he might just cite that memo he used to get hired, which would be unbelievably damning. And so, right. You know, that's sort of like, I think, the craziest scenario. And to some degree, it'll focus real scrutiny on how he could say you're not going to charge Donald Trump for floating pardons when I said three times in my confirmation hearing, which he did, including to Lindsey Graham. It wasn't just Democrats who were asking that getting people to lie in exchange for a pardon would be obstruction. Like he said that three times. And if the advice that was given to him in March of 2019 conflicted with that, then it would clearly be a con job as well. It is a very important thing to shine some light on the corruption of Bill Barr.
Mm-hmm.
I hope one of the things I think people don't really understand is the extent to which Bill Barr like took a flamethrower and torched every single thing that Robert Mueller had touched.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people are like starting around Valentine's Day. They're like, why hasn't Merrick Garland charged Donald Trump for obstruction yet? Believing that the Mueller report, as it was released in March of 2019, is still in place. And it's not, because what Barr did, what Barr spent the remainder of his period doing, a year and a half doing, was, you know, burning everything down.
Yeah.
And making sure that Merrick Garland or whoever came in would never be able to make anything what Mueller did was the obstruction volume was a referral to Congress to impeach, didn't work. And there were ongoing criminal investigations into Trump in volume one that, you know, we didn't learn about. For example, there was an investigation into a $10 million transfer through an Egyptian bank in September of 2016, which kept Donald Trump in the race.
Wow.
And that was shut down in summer of 2020. And that was something that I assume Bill Barr, again, took a flamethrower to. He tried to make it so every single thing that Mueller had left in place could not be charged. And Garland did, in fact, charge Tom Barrack, who's going to trial in weeks. But, you know, a lot of the rest, and this is what I hope, one of the things I hope people will realize, a lot of the rest, it really isn't a matter of, like, there were these obstruction cases left in this jar for Merrick Garland to come crack open with a hammer and then charge Trump. I mean, Barr made sure to like destroy that jar, roll over it with a steamroller, and then dump it into the Pacific Ocean, never to be found again. Like that stuff was so badly destroyed. And you know, I covered this in real time, and very few people did. And, you know, I've heard that DOJ was looking into some of it. We haven't heard anything since. But this is what really needs to come out is the extent to which Bill Barr was a really corrupt MF-er.
Yes. And, you know, I wonder if he regrets it now, because he famously resigned after the events of the square, when Trump walked through with went over to do the photo op with the Bible upside down, and basically wanted the military to, well, they did use tear gas on the people that were gathered there.
Barr doesn't care. Barr does not care. And the reason Barr does not care is because Amy Coney Barrett will be on the Supreme Court for the rest of her life.
Oh my God.
And for him, Donald Trump was just a means to accomplish his his very regressive religious authoritarianism. Donald Trump is not the kind of regressive religious authoritarian. I mean, he's an authoritarian. He's just a different type.
Right.
But Bill Barr is the Amy Coney Barrett type. Mm. And Bill Barr stuck around long enough to ensure that she got a lifetime appointment.
Yeah,
and so
he did.
He's never going to regret that.
But then how about his testimony? In the deposition that was shown during the hearings, he was very forthcoming. I think he called Donald Trump an asshole
not kind. But did he also confess that he spent 6 months before that undermining?
No.
I mean, you don't have Trump's big lie,
right?
Unless you have Bill Barr's claims for 6 months in advance about the insecurities of mail-in voting.
Right.
You do not have January 6th, and this is so important for people to understand. One of the things that Bill Barr did to make sure that to kill the Mueller investigation was when he was trying to ensure that Roger Stone would not be punished severely.
Mm-hmm.
He said one of the things that DOJ was saying is you have to enhance Roger Stone's punishment because well on pretrial release, he teamed up with his buddies, including Enrique Tarrio.
Yes.
Four different Proud Boys. He teamed up with his buddies and threatened his judge, Amy Berman Jackson. And so basically what Barr said in February of 2020 to ensure that Roger Stone, that his punishment would not be at all severe, what he said was a threat from Roger Stone in conjunction with the Proud Boys against a sitting federal judge, that is a technicality unworthy of a sentencing enhancement. So he literally, and I'm not exaggerating, this is I can point to the filings, this DOJ literally said that the people who were going to launch an insurrection on January 6th teamed up together, Roger Stone and the Proud Boys.
Mm-hmm.
They were central to the organization of that attack on January 6th, that their attacks on a federal judge were a technicality. So for him to disclaim involvement in January 6th is just ridiculous. And it's, you know, it's a testament to how good he is at working the press, but it's got to stop.
No kidding. You know, it's amazing, Marcy. Your work is so detailed and so in-depth. You can pull on any thread and it'll take you down another road. So Roger Stone, for instance, in the inventory of the documents taken from Mar-a-Lago, we see Roger Stone's executive clemency order, but you executive grant of clemency. But you mentioned in a piece at emptywheel.net that it may not be the one we know of, that this might mention Emmanuel Macron, the president of France? What is this about?
Well, the way in which that that inventory works is there are items and then sub-items. And virtually all the sub-items, with one exception, show what was inside a box. So, for example, you have box 13A, maybe. And then you have box A13, item 7, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then item 7A, so the contents of that box of item 7, it says top secret documents. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. So you have the item and then the sub-item. And the way in which the clemency for Roger Stone works is the item is clemency for Roger Stone, and the sub-item is information about the president of France. Now, people just dismiss that possibility, partly because they haven't looked at the warrant that closely, but partly because they're like, oh, we know about the pardon of Roger Stone. And I showed the other day that, as I've said, there was an ongoing investigation into Roger Stone about conspiring with Russia to hack.
Yep.
That was ongoing until April 2020. And it's never been explained what that investigation was about. We know it involved GRU. We know that Stone had ties with, you know, the GRU persona who was behind the Hillary Clinton hack and leak. And we know that very close associates of Roger Stone, namely Jack Posobiec, in May of 2017, so in the range of the Mueller investigation, we know that they teamed up with GRU in the Macron leaks. In this, it's a similar kind of thing, a hack and leak of the opponent of the far right. And so what that was an attempt to damage Macron when Marine Le Pen was running against him.
Right. Wow.
It involved one of the very same hackers that hacked Hillary Clinton. That's my best guess. And I'm like, look, the timing works too. Like, we know that investigation into Roger Stone, or we believe that that investigation into Roger Stone was ongoing in September of 2020. We believe that it was ended. Like, Barr basically disclosed this on the night before the election in 2020. He released it to Jason Leopold. And I'm literally still to this day, the only journalist who's reported on this footnote that said there was this ongoing hacking investigation into Roger Stone. And sometime between the middle of September and the night before the election, that investigation went away. And that, oh, by the way, happens to be when the most politicized U.S. attorney in Pittsburgh charged these same hackers and claimed evidence to the contrary. We know that this is not true, saying we have no idea how these documents got leaked. And it's like, we know exactly how the documents got leaked. They got to Jack Posobiec, and he's the one who pushed them. Not just him, also these Nazis and other, I mean, the kinds of people who hang out with Roger Stone.
Right.
And so it was, I don't know if that is what went on. I know that that is a very plausible explanation of how there would be a pardon for Roger Stone mentioning the president of France, because his known buddies, were involved in a hack and leak of the president of France. Wow. in the period that Robert Mueller was investigating, and some of the same Russian hackers that Robert Mueller was investigating.
Gotcha. It's just, you keep digging and you go down these nooks and crannies, and who knows where you wind up. I guess that's what we're waiting to find out. So, Marcy Wheeler, all this stuff, is basically since we last spoke just a couple of weeks ago. In the meantime, the January 6th trials continue. DOJ now asking for the depositions, all basically everything that the January 6th committee has, and it looks like they're getting a lot of it. What do we need to know that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, the Oath Keepers, the first batch of the Oath Keepers are going to trial. I forget whether it's next month or October, but it's a matter of weeks now. They're talking, they're getting into the details about where they're going to store things, and they've already got the people eligible to be on that jury pre-selected.
Oh,
so that's actually going to be a really interesting trial. There's some indication that there are at least one or two informants who we don't know about who are really, really sensitive. So there may be interesting things that we discover at that first trial. So I think there are five of them in that first batch.
Wow.
Including, unless I'm mistaken, I believe that Kelly Meggs is still going in that first batch. So he's, I mean, there's a bunch of people from Florida in that batch. So
of course,
that's going to be interesting. I think that things are getting closer, right? There's the fake elector scam, which included threats of violence from people like Ali Alexander. And it's clear that they've sent subpoenas to all these high profile Republicans who were part of it. And there are more and more people coming from the bottom who were aware of and part of that. And so we're getting closer to that moment where it's all going to join together in a fiery ball and go up in smoke. But, I obviously, after the end of August, we may not see as much activity on the top part
right.
until after the election.
Right.
I don't know how they're going to deal with that. So, you know, there are a lot of people who are on the ballot. Yes. Scott Perry is fighting a warrant for his phone as we speak today. He's on the ballot. He is that congressperson who really was the pivot point between members of Congress and the White House. And so we'll see whether anything happens with that before the end of the month, which is really when it's going to happen. Otherwise, people shouldn't expect anything to happen until November. But while the election happens between in September and October, Donald Trump is going to be doing crazy stuff with this search. Because of the things he's done recently, this is not going to go out. This is still going to be in the news between now and November.
Right. And we're also hearing about this letter that Donald Trump sent to Merrick Garland, which is perceived as a threat, as a veiled threat. And he said in it something to the effect of, I know it's getting hot out there. Anything I can do to lower the heat, you let me know. On the surface, it sounds like he wants to help. But we know who Donald Trump is, and he doesn't want to help, does he?
Well, and that's actually a statement that his lawyer, a guy named Evan Corcoran, understood to be a guy named Evan Corcoran, said to Jay Bratt in these discussions about these warrants. He said it, and this is crazy, he said it when one of the people from January 6th who had not yet been arrested had tried to shoot up the Cincinnati FBI.
Oh, right.
Had come with an assault rifle to the and a nail gun to try and break through the door of the FBI in Cincinnati and started a shootout with the cops and gotten killed. So he did that at this moment of political violence in response to him getting searched. He's going to try and make it impossible to prosecute him. I think that people really, you asked about the January 6th cases. Mm-hmm. And I think the people have their eyes have just run over because they're it's just one after another person. And for most people, it's just this massive people that they can't really visualize the import of. And, you know, I said the other day, that guy who got in the fight with the Cincinnati cops and got himself killed, there are 5,000 other people, and I'm not exaggerating with that number, who did something on January 6th just as culpable that the FBI will have already identified. You know, because they know that they were at January 6th and they're trying to figure out whether it's easy and worth it to make the case, who might any day go, you know, flip and start shooting up an FBI yeah. office. And the FBI has done a lot, I think, to they are also investigating the top down to try and neutralize the way in which that violence is spread as much as they can. And, you know, I doubt they'll be entirely successful. They're just 5,000 of these people out there. Right. Yeah. And that doesn't include the people who stayed home on January 6th. It's a dicey time. And I think that DOJ and the FBI don't really get enough credit for neutralizing a lot of the political violence that Trump is encouraging.
And he is encouraging it. And that's the thing that, you know, the other thing we need to keep in mind. Watch what he does, not necessarily what he says, but the actions surrounding what he says, because he is trying to incite violence all the while claiming innocence and, I'm trying to help. It's opposite world in so many aspects. Marcy Willer, we could keep going forever, but I know it's getting late over there and it just doesn't end. That's a good thing that emptywill.net exists so we can read up on all this stuff. There's a bunch of stuff that we didn't even touch on yet. Anything that I should have asked you that I didn't?
No, I think we got it. Okay. I think you deserve a break as much as everyone else. So.
It's exhausting. I commend you. I do it all the time, but you deserve it. You're doing such a great job. You are the emptywill.net is the place to go to try to put all the pieces together and figure this out. Thank you for your work. It's just so invaluable. Invaluable, valuable. Both. All of it. Right. Thank you, Marcy. So appreciate it.
Really great to be on, Nicole. Take care.
Thank you. Marcy Wheeler. I can't thank her enough. You know, Brad Friedman and I are friends, just so you know. And he enjoys having Marcy Wheeler on his program, too, because of all the great information she gives. But we try not to have the same guest on, you know, too close to each other. Certainly not in the same week. But it happens sometimes. And so Brad had Marcy on last week. I had called her last week and said, you know, after the search warrant was served, was executed. And she's like, is there a thing with you and Brad? And it's like, no, you know, he just wants to make sure we're not doing it the same. So we're trying to alternate appearances. So this was my week. And then Brad doesn't have her on as often as I do, but I, you know, shit, I'd have her on every week now if I could. Brad Friedman, sorry, long shot Louie. Brad Friedman runs his blogs at the Brad Blog, bradblog.com, and he hosts the Bradcast. And, you know, I fill in for him fairly regularly. I got to tell you, I had to turn down guest hosting for him next week because, you know, they're going to take some time off for Labor Day. But I'm going to be out with my eye surgery. Mike Malloy called me yesterday to ask if I could fill in for him for a few days. And I had to tell him I can't. I mean, I would love to, but I got to wait till this surgery clears. Those of you who donated already, thank you so much. As I said at the beginning of the show, I hate asking for money. But this program is 100% listener supported. So that's how I, you know, try to pay the bills. You guys pay my salary such as it is. But now I'm putting out an extra ask because I have a 20% copay and surgery a week from today. So any extra donations would be greatly appreciated. NicoleSandler.com is my website. There's a donate button there. It'll take you to a donate page. There's all different kinds of ways to donate to the program. Venmo, Zelle, PayPal, Stripe, a one-shot thing, a recurring donation, snail mail, when a check. I mean, you know, I'm not too proud. So however you can and will, I please do, and I thank you profusely. All right, we got a couple of minutes left. I guess I should talk about the election, huh? So primary day yesterday here in Florida. And, of course, New York. And there was a special election, I think, in Oklahoma. You know, I feel sorry for people who live in Oklahoma because they live in Oklahoma. But and you got lost in the shuffle because all the attention for this week's primaries were on New York and Florida, as it should be. Here in Florida, as I knew, Charlie Crist won the Democratic nomination. So he will take on more on death sentence. Look, I think Charlie can win. I really do. Because death sentence is such a heinous, sad excuse for a human being. He's just really the worst of the worst. So, and I think people are getting fed up with his dictatorial moves. Hopefully. And then hopefully, everyone will come out to vote against, death sentence, you know, and shut him down in his quest for the White House as well. In other Florida news, Val Demings is now going up against Marco Rubio for Senate. We knew that was going to happen because she really didn't have any legitimate opponents. In my district, exactly what I told you was going to happen happened. Jared Moskowitz, one of the candidates who ignored my invitations to come on the show. He was the heir apparent. He was groomed. It was like he was supposed to get the gig, and he did. The guy I voted for, Ben Sorensen, the vice mayor of Fort Lauderdale, came in second. In the 10th district, that was Val Demings' district up in the Orlando area, Frost, a 25-year-old Gen Zer, anti-gun activist, he won. He beat Alan Grayson. He beat Corinne Brown, two former members of Congress, a member of the Florida Senate who placed second. Grayson was third, Corinne Brown fourth. So that happened. What else? Our friend Annette Tadeo won her primary, as we knew she would. So it's moving on to November there. In New York, Gerald Nadler beat Carolyn Maloney, like routed her big time. So Carolyn Maloney's 30-year congressional career ends at the end of the year. What else? Dan Goldman beat out Mondaire Jones and Elizabeth Holtzman and a slate of like 10 other candidates to get the nomination in New York's 10th. And he'll go on to Congress because that, like my district, is a very blue district. Unfortunately, Max Rose won. Democrats, what are you thinking about? You had a really great option against Max Rose, but he won overwhelmingly. So those were the big races. And in the special election up sort of upstate Western New York, the Democrat won, making it a harbinger of good things to come. That's my Reader's Digest version. All right. And tomorrow is Thursday and Howie Klein returns to the show. So we'll be together tomorrow. And then next week, I'm going to be off for my surgery. So, you know, it's always something. If it's not one thing, it's another. All right. Have a great night, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. But first, I'll leave you with the news. All right. Howie tomorrow. News now. Thank you. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Results are in from Tuesday's primaries in New York, Florida, and Oklahoma, and we now have a clearer picture of November's matchups. We'll begin in Florida, where Democrats nominated former Republican governor, now Democratic Congressman Charlie Crist, to go up against the current flamethrower, Ron DeSantis. But DeSantis has $132 million on hand for the general election. That's a record number for a gubernatorial candidate who isn't self-funded. And he's animated the Republican base more than any other Republican politician, aside from the former guy. Charlie Crist has an uphill battle on his hands. As expected, Representative Val Demings, who rose to national prominence as one of the impeachment managers in the first impeachment of the former guy, easily took the Democratic nomination to challenge absentee Republican Senator Marco Rubio. One of the more hotly contested races here in Florida was the Democratic primary in the 10th Congressional District. In the Orlando area, that's the seat being vacated by Val Demings in order to run for the Senate. It was the 25-year young Gen Zer Maxwell Frost defeating former Representatives Alan Grayson, who placed third, and Corinne Brown, who placed fourth, and State Senator Randolph Bracey, who finished second. In other Florida races of interest, State Senator Annette Tadeo walked away with the nomination for the 27th district. And in my district, Florida's 23rd, as expected, heir apparent Jared Moskowitz will replace Ted Deutch in the House in this very reliably blue South Florida district. In New York, a couple of monumental moves. Due to redistricting and thanks to Democratic Party overreach and gerrymandering being punished, two 30-year House veterans were pitted against each other. And in New York's 12th District, Gerald Nadler, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, trounced Carolyn Maloney, chair of the House Oversight Committee. She'll exit Congress at the end of the year. In the hotly contested 10th District, Dan Goldman, the self-funding heir to the Levi Strauss fortune, who's also a former federal prosecutor and was a Democratic counsel in the first impeachment hearing of Donald Trump, beat incumbent Mondaire Jones. Now, Jones was also a victim of redistricting, and although he's technically an incumbent, none of his current constituents are in this new 10th district. He went down along with a bunch of other contenders, and Goldman will now most likely head to D.C. from this district that will go to the Democrats. Also in New York, the conservadem chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, Sean Patrick Maloney, easily beat back his progressive challenger, Alessandro Biaggi. And in a special House election in a swing district that pundits believe will be an early indicator of the impact of the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade in November, the Democrat, Pat Ryan, beat Republican Mark Molinaro 52-48%, keeping the seat in Democratic hands. And in Oklahoma, Republicans chose a nominee to serve out the remainder of retiring Senator Jim Inhofe's term ahead of a special general election there. Now, by the time you hear this report, President Biden may have already announced his plans for student loan debt. The current pause on federal student loan payments is set to expire 1 week from today, on August 31st. Today, the president is expected to announce his decision to cancel up to $10,000 in federal student loan debt per borrower. It'll be means tested for people earning under $125,000 per year. Now, the Biden administration has already canceled nearly $32 billion of the $1.6 trillion in outstanding federal student debt by expanding existing forgiveness programs for public sector workers, disabled borrowers, and students who were defrauded by for-profit colleges. Still, Biden's facing pressure to do more, mostly from some Democrats who are urging him to cancel $50,000 in debt per borrower. The White House today may also announce whether or not they will once again extend the current pause on loan repayments.
They did.
Again, before it expires next week.
They did.
In a surprising move, former police detective Kelly Goodlett pleaded guilty in federal court Tuesday to falsifying a search warrant application for the raid in which police fatally shot Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky. Goodlett also admitted to trying to cover up the effort to mislead the judge who authorized the warrant. Goodlett's plea makes her the first officer convicted in connection with that raid on Taylor's apartment in March of 2020, ostensibly to search for evidence of drug dealing by Taylor's former boyfriend. The maximum sentence Goodlett could face is 5 years, and a fourth officer who fired those 10 shots into two apartments also faces charges of violating Taylor's civil rights. Ukraine is commemorating its Independence Day today, 6 months to the day since Russia's invasion began on February 24th. There won't be any celebrations today, though, as officials warn that Russia may carry out missile attacks against Ukrainian cities. And instead of a parade, a slew of wrecked and captured Russian military vehicles were displayed on Kyiv's main street to acknowledge Moscow's failed attempt to capture the capital in the early weeks of the war. President Zelensky marked the day with an emotional address saying, quote, "Every new day is a new reason not to give up. Because having gone through so much, we have no right not to reach the end." Ukraine's Independence Day marks 31 years since Ukraine broke ties with the Soviet Union. And in an announcement likely timed to hit on this Independence Day, President Biden announced another $3 billion in aid. In a statement explaining that the money will go to air defense systems, artillery systems, munitions, and other warfighting material. And finally, even the worst drought in history has at least one silver lining, right? Well, in an almost dry riverbed in Texas, due to extreme drought conditions, dinosaur tracks from around 113 million years ago were uncovered. It was at Dinosaur Valley State Park, which makes sense, in Texas. And they're saying more prehistoric findings are likely as water levels continue to drop. Meanwhile, in Florida, today marks 30 years since Hurricane Andrew slammed into the state, ultimately destroying more than 49,000 homes and killing dozens of people. And now we're nearing the end of the month of August. If things remain calm for one more week, this will be only the third August in 60 years without one single named storm. Fingers crossed. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.